So we lost some of our team just because they're now on their way to Uganda. Yeah. So, and I just got a call from my wife. Anthony Basaba, the big tall guy, is now in Uganda. So it's just amazing. You can go from here there in just a matter of a little time. So Anthony Basaba. Yeah, Basaba. Huh? Flight? It's long. It's like you got 10 hours, you know, from California at least, you have 10 hours to Europe and then another 10 hours basically to Uganda. So that doesn't include the layovers and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, 21 hours in the air, so. Yeah, they flew from here. So since I don't live here, I don't know how much. Is it? Okay. Cool. Well, what a joy, what a privilege, what an honor it has been to be with you this week. I love the friendship. I love the interaction. I love that you even cut me off when I'm talking. You know, I love it. It's great. And I just pray that our interaction has spurred you on and will continue to spur you on to missions. And now when I say missions, what do I refer to? I refer to two things. I refer to overseas missions and I refer to local missions. And who is a missionary? If you're a missionary, raise your hand. Amina? Good. We are all missionaries. So I just get to be one in a foreign country. And by God's grace, some of you will one day go to a foreign country. But with that, you know, the problem is we are all missionaries, but too few of us have the heart of a missionary. And I want to tell you, please, I beg of you, never come go be a foreign missionary without first being a missionary here. You know why? Because you become an incredible waste of money. We spend more money over there for people to meet with people over coffee. You know, the average missionary gets anywhere between $60,000 to $80,000 a year to support himself, partly because of insurance and travels and everything like that. And it becomes an incredible waste of money when you are not zealous, you are not passionate, and when you do not have the heart of a missionary. So what I want to do with you now, what I want to do in our last session together is talk about the heart of a missionary, number one. And then number two, what I want to talk about is the cost of being a missionary. Is that okay? Yes, you guys aren't going to get tired and sleep on me, right? Okay. I guarantee you I was up later than most of you. You slept at 3? What time did you go to bed? 4. Okay, I wasn't. I went to bed at 2:30. I thought I was late, but... Okay, you beat me. All right, whoa. Just kidding. But I want to show you the heart of a missionary. Open to my favorite book in the Bible, to Romans chapter 1. Romans chapter 1. And I want to show you the heart of a missionary. Paul, in Romans chapter 1, it's like he dissects his own heart before his congregation. He just rips it open and shows his readers, the church in Rome, his heart. His heart for them. Now, let me tell you something. Paul had never been to Rome. Never. But we're going to see certain characteristics of his heart for people he's never been to. And I want us to look in Romans chapter 1 and see the characteristics of a missionary. This church began to think that he didn't love them. And so he writes these words to affirm in their minds that he loves them. And so what comes out, he spreads his heart because he wants them to understand his love for them. First, if you would see, the first characteristic of a missionary is their longing for, listen, people. Their longing for people. Their love for people. Look what he says in verse 11. And I'm just going to go rapid fire for you because I want to cover a lot with you. For everybody with me, for I, verse 11. Oh, come on. That sounds like you went to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. Let's go. That's good. For I long to see you. Who does he long to see? The Romans, who he had never seen. Paul had a longing for people. And we know from Thessalonians that he didn't just give a message, but he gave what? His whole life. Paul says, and we're going to read it later, that he suffered all kinds of heart, but the worst of it all was the churches. For he longed and loved people. My friends, some of us, the only thing, the only person we love in the whole entire world is ourselves. You know what? One thing I realized when I got to college, I really loved myself. I thought I was just friendly, but a lot of my friendliness wasn't for the love of others. It was so that others would see me and say, look how cool he is. And we all want to be cool, right? Thank you. We all want to be cool, but at some point in our life, we need to say, it's no longer about me. It's no longer about my coolness. I want others to feel loved. One thing I told my daughter and I tell myself, every conversation, I want to leave an aroma of Christ. And every conversation, I want to say, have I encouraged them to love Christ more? Have I made them feel loved? Even if it's a little thing that says, hey, good to see you. You know, there's little things we can do to love people. It's about people. Paul says, I long to see you. I cannot wait to get to Rome. For I long to see you. Friends, we must bleed people. A missionary is a person who bleeds people. I love the life of Jesus. Jesus is sitting down. And all these kids are wanting to come to him. The disciples are, get these kids away. Let the children what? Come unto me. I want to love them. He's in a mass hurry. There's crowds just crowding all around him. And he's walking in the midst of that stuff. Did you touch me? Always had time for people. One of the person that's probably made the biggest impact in my life, a guy named Cliff Williams, is the guy that died of Lou Gehrig's disease. That guy loved people. He'd hug everyone. Always loved people. Look it. You know the biggest problem in African missions? The biggest problem is these missionaries, they come to Africa and they build their walls up. They go into their homes and they never bring the people into their lives. And the Africans think, wait a second here. Why don't they love us? Why don't they care for us? They think that we're colonialists. They think that we're just kings in a kingdom and then we have our little servants. They think that we have some motives, like we want to exploit them. And it's because we never let them into our lives. And as youth pastors, man, your door is never closed. You always have room. When you want family time, go hide in your room and hang out with your family. My kids and I, we jump on the bed all the time. Nowhere else to go, so let's jump on the bed. I tell my kids they're not allowed to jump on the bed. But... You know, but whatever it is, it's letting people not just into your home, but into your heart. Friends, look it. The end of the day, all that matters is your soul. What can we take in this world with us? Nothing. The only thing that lasts are souls. One thing I try and do as I walk through the crowds, one thing I try and do is I try to, when I preach, sit on people's laps because I care for them so much, I will not let them sleep. Just kidding. But what I try and do is when I look out at people, look at them in light of souls. And you go to the mall, you look at them in light of souls, and you see this person either is going to heaven or hell. Last year, I preached on hell. I had one time to preach. I said, okay, let me just give it to them. So I preached on hell. Maybe see if it's online. I don't know if it is or not. But look and see what hell is like. You want a motivation for people, see what hell is like. But my friends, if you're going to be a missionary, you must now have a heart for people. And let me tell you, I can already tell some of you, the heart that you have is for yourself. You cannot get over yourself. You love yourself so much, you're so self-promoting. But if you care for people, all you want to do is look in their eyes and say, hey, continue on, hang in there. You understand what I'm saying? Find ways, every conversation, to love someone, encourage someone. See, the thing about Jesus, he had a way of looking into the heart, through the eyes and into the heart. We have to develop that ability. Paul says, I long for people. Second thing he says, second characteristic of a missionary is that... normally I have my other Bible, so I have these all underlined. And he says, for I long to see you that I may impart some spiritual gift to you. That is that you may be encouraged. That is that I may be encouraged with you while among you. Second characteristic is seen in verse 13. I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that I have often what? Planned to come to you. Here is the second characteristic of a missionary, and I want you to get it, because if you can get something, I need you to get this. Paul planned. Paul was strategic in his mission. Paul had thought to himself, I have got to get to Rome, and he makes a plan as to how he might get to Rome. And we find out that the plan didn't happen. God prevented it, but Paul made a plan. The problem is with us, we are not planners, how we will strategize to impact our worlds. You know, the reality is around this seminary, you have the most liberal homes around. How is that? How can a theological school be right here and liberals right there? Because we don't make what? Plans. You want to be a missionary? Plan how you might reach those around. If you don't plan, you will not reach them. Are you hearing me? You say, Shan, I want to be a missionary. Make a plan. How are you going to meet your how are you going to reach your neighbors? If you're a church, how are you going to reach the neighbors around you? What is your plan? Come up with something. Maybe it's saying, you know what? That quest for truth Shannon has online, I'm gonna get it down. And I'm going to take one person through it a year. That's a plan, right? But come up with a plan. A missionary plans. Paul says, I plan to come to you. The reason why Paul planned to go to Rome is because Rome was the most strategic country in the world. The historian says that all roads led into Rome and all roads led out of Rome. So Paul knew if I get to Rome, I have an influence in Rome, then that influence will spread where? To the world. So I have got to get to Rome. Paul kept trying, he kept trying. You know what happened? He couldn't get to Rome. I don't know why. It doesn't tell us why. But what Paul did, he says, I'm going to Jerusalem. And on his way to Jerusalem, people are saying, no, Paul, don't go. Don't go. If you go to Jerusalem, they're going to kill you. Because let me tell you, people in Jerusalem hated Paul. He was breaking up the whole Jewish system left and right. Christians were running away from Judaism. And so people were saying, no, don't go. Don't go. Please don't go. Paul goes right up to the temple. Gets up to the temple. They arrest him. When they arrest him, they go and try and put him in jail to kill him. And Paul says, ah, I'm a Roman citizen. What did that mean? He had to be tried in Rome. You know what happened? They put him on a boat free of charge to Rome. How did he get to Rome? Imprisonment. Paul had a plan. Paul had a plan. Even in this letter, the whole reason we have the book of Romans is because he had a plan. If I can't get there physically, I will write a letter. I will send the gospel there. Friends, we don't reach people because we don't plan. Right? When is the last time you had a plan to reach those around you? No wonder. We have this much impact. You know, Christians are just passed from church to church. But if we are going to plant churches, let's go and get unbelievers, disciple them up till they come to Christ. But we need plans. As youth pastors, plan with your youth how they're going to reach their campuses for Christ. Make a plan. Plan how you are going to reach your community. Maybe it's bringing cookies or, you know, for SOS, what we did was our community outreach is a result of us planning. How can we make an impact in our communities that the people around us might come to Christ, that they might know him? So we made plans to do that. And our ministry is just a result of carrying out our plans to reach the lost. So a heart of a missionary, not only do they first do what? Love people. Everybody, they first what? Secondly, they come up with a plan. Friends, how many of you will go home and make a plan? Come on. Don't tell me yes unless you're really going to do it. And if you don't raise your hand, you're a loser. So, I mean, either way, no, I'm just kidding. You know, but come up with a plan. And a plan, start off simple. Don't come off like, okay, I'm going to like evangelize everyone on my campus this year. You know, that's not realistic. Start with one. And the cool thing, I wrote Quest Rosary just for you to take others through it. All you got to do is open up to page one, read it, and everybody answer it. You know? Third aspect. Of a heart of a missionary. It says in verse 13, I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that I have often planned to come to you so that I may obtain some fruit among you, even among the rest of the Gentiles. And then verse 14 says, I am what? Under obligation, both to Greeks and to barbarians, both to the wise and to the foolish. The second thing about a missionary is they live with an obligation to carry out their mission. They inwardly are motivated, inwardly are driven, even inwardly are under pressure in their souls to reach those who are lost around them. Paul says, I am under obligation. Why? God said, Paul, come here, Paul. What I want you to do, you see those Gentiles out there? They have never reached Christ. They don't even know who I am. I am calling you to them. Paul says, okay. Then what happens? He spends the rest of his life living under obligation to fulfill the calling God has given him. I'm under obligation to the Jews and the Greeks. Why? Because God has called me to this task. God's called me. I must be driven. I feel under obligation to strengthen the churches in the Uganda. And I cannot rest till it happens. And you live with a vision. You live with a passion. You live with a drive. You don't need the sleep. You need to reach the people. The problem is we don't do anything because we have no obligation. We don't have that inward zeal, that inward passion. But a missionary, a true missionary, lives with that obligation. You know where that obligation starts? In the home. Friends, we are so much, what stops us so often is ourselves. We don't live with an obligation for others because we're too obligated with ourselves. But a true missionary, there's something in them. Drive. Passion. Because they are consumed that they would fulfill their mission. They're consumed that they would reach those around them. If you are a youth pastor, you have a mission to make sure your youth are reached. That is the calling which God has given you by nature of the position in which you are in, as well as to your children. Am I right? Let's see, so much are discontent of us just doing the job, this activity, that activity. Where's the passion? Where's the obligation? My biggest challenge as a missionary is I'm dependent as a missionary on a world of supporters. And so we want to run, but the support is just, you're always like, okay, Lord, please, please, please. And rallying everybody up and saying, please help. You guys, you are fully furnished in your youth groups as youth pastors, fully equipped really in the resource area, though you might need to rally up some more helpers to do discipleship, but live with that obligation. Live with that drive. You guys that are on school campuses, you're on those campuses for a reason. So live with that passion. Fourth and final characteristic I'm going to bring out here, and I'm just moving quickly because I want to cover everything, is verse 16. This is another characteristic of a missionary. And what is it, friends? What about the gospel? A missionary is unashamed of the gospel. A missionary is bold. A missionary is zealous. A missionary says, I don't care what people think of me. They must get the gospel. Why? Because it's the gospel, which is the power of God for salvation. So a true missionary, they are bold. They are unashamed. They are even eager, as Paul says in the previous verse, to get them to the gospel. And they don't care what steps in their way. That's why we have missionaries going into Iraq. We don't care. It's not about our lives. It is about the proclamation of our King. Allah is not that God. Jesus Christ is. Am I right? And we sit there with our friends. I'm like, well, I'm a Christian. I'm saying, well, can I go on a mission trip? And we can't even share Christ here. Are you with me? A missionary is someone who loves people, loves others. A missionary is someone who has a plan. A missionary is someone that lives with a
obligation.
And a missionary is someone who is. That is the heart of a missionary. Do you have that heart? Do you have that heart? Sometimes. I think the answer is, I want it more. And let me tell you, I already told you the key of missions when I spoke in that big group. What is it? Being in this every day. As you bleed over this, as you study it with sweat on your brow, as you make a faithful commitment to be in it every day, God will give you these characteristics. He'll give you this heart. And He'll keep by His Spirit just pushing you out. Of that box all the more. And when my friends, when you know what you need to do, you need to share with these people, and you're being held back by your little comfort zone, boo, break through it. I remember early in my high school years going to a homeless shelter. I go into that homeless shelter and it's like immediately hit with the pee smell. You know what I mean? Now you go into there and you think to this man, I kind of feel uncomfortable. And I said, but that's like totally ungodly. I need to love these people. And I walk in there and I say, okay, and I just start hugging these bums, you know, and smelling like them and getting sweaty like them. And I just want to, okay, every contact, I want someone to feel like, know that I love them, know that I care for them. Hey, buddy, how are you? And I was the one preaching. And I'll never forget, so the guy of the mission came in at the end. He says, I don't know who you are. You know, it was a little charismatic. But, you know, I see the hand of God in your life. He wanted to call me into his office and pray and anoint me with oil. It was weird. But you know what? Who received the blessing in the end? God and me. In order to gain your life, you need to lose it. God and me. Get out of that comfort zone. Fight through yourself. And love people. You see, the problem is this, dear friends. Let me be honest with you. To be a missionary, to be someone who loves people, to be somebody who makes a plan and seeks with all his heart to carry out that plan, to be someone that lives with this obligation and is carrying out that obligation, to be someone that's unashamed, it is going to come, listen to me, at a cost. And this is where you and I step back and stop. Because it's going to cost. And let me tell you, we don't know what that cost will be. Look, when I decided to be a missionary, I knew it was going to cost me. One, it cost me a great paying job. It cost me leaving my home, leaving my families. It cost me going to a place I have no idea what's going to happen with my family. And let me tell you, every day it costs me. You're living for something called heaven. You come to the point, and you have to, if you're going to be a true missionary, come to the point where you just live for heaven. It's no longer about here. No longer about here. But it's going to come at a cost, and the cost will be your life. That has always been the way it has been. Even you look at the prophets, look with me in Jeremiah. I was just reading this just the other day. Jeremiah. It says, Jeremiah chapter 32. It says, now at that time, the army of the king of Babylon was besieging Jerusalem. And Jeremiah the prophet was shut up in the court of the guards, which was in the house of the king of Judah. What he's saying, he was put in jail. I'm sorry, you're supposed to guess those things. Just kidding. Verse 2. So he was put in jail. He was put in the court of the guard, which is in the house. Why? Verse 3, because Zedekiah, the king of Judah, had shut him up, saying, why do you what?
prophesy, saying, thus says the Lord, behold, I am about to give you this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and take, and he will take it. Why do you say these things? Why did he put him in jail? Because Jeremiah was going and prophesying and saying what the Lord wanted him to say. There's one reason he was put in jail. He was doing what God told him to do. Listen to his heart. He says, and let me just get it here. Hold on one second. He says, I was just pulling this out as an example. I just read the other day, and I'm it's taking me longer to get to it. I apologize. Give me one second. Awkward silence. Thank you. I appreciate that. It was really good. Just kidding. Hold on. When you're preaching, never give an example on the fly, okay? Because you just do this kind of thing. What'd you say? That's why you planned earlier. Thanks, I appreciate that. Now you're really insulting me. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to pull it up, but I'll find it beforehand. But now turn your Bibles to Romans chapter 10. But what he says is, he says, look, it basically just talks of his own suffering. He says, and he cries out, God, why? Why are you doing this to me? Because he didn't realize that the cost of being a prophet was pain. Look with me in Matthew chapter 10. Jesus is going to send out missionaries. Now, did I say Romans? I'm just making sure you guys are moving. Now go to Matthew chapter 10. Now go to Luke. I'm just kidding. No, go to Matthew chapter 10. And here what happens is God turns and he sends out people, these servants, to go and proclaim the message about himself. And he says, look in verse 16, behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be shrewd as serpents and innocent as doves, but beware of men. Okay, I'm sending you out, and beware of men. For they will what? They will hand you over to the courts and scourge you in the synagogues, and you will even be brought before the governor, the governor and kings, for my sake, as a testimony. Verse 19, but when they hand you over, do not be worried about what you'll say, for I'll give you the words. What is he saying? What he's saying is, look, I'm going to send you out, and you are going to suffer. Woo! Well, thanks, Jesus. And you want us to go out? Let me tell you, every missionary has always suffered. Every missionary. It is the cost of being a missionary. Paul, in 2 Corinthians, turn there with me. Last one there is a loser. Let's go. 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Listen to Paul. This is the cost he went through. Verse 23, chapter 11, verse 23 of 2 Corinthians. Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I am more so, in far more labors, in far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I've received from the Jews 39 lashes. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Even I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. a night and a day I spent in the deep. I have been in frequent journeys, in dangers from rivers, in dangers of robbers, in dangers of my countrymen, dangers of Gentiles, dangers in cities, dangers in wilderness, dangers of the sea, dangers of false brethren. Let me tell you, being a missionary, you're always in dangers. Being a missionary, you're always under trial. You're always under persecution. He continues on and on and on. 27, I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights and hunger and the thirst, often without food and cold and exposure. Apart from such external things, there is the daily pressure on me of the concern for the churches. There's the people. Let me tell you, I know nothing of Paul's suffering. But I know my own suffering. I know my own suffering. I know the pressures that is continually upon me. I know that I spent a month away from my wife this month. I see her for 2 weeks and I spent another month away from her. I know that there's times I want to go and hang out with my daughter in the holiday world, but I have other responsibilities pushing on my back. And I hear my kids say, "It's okay, Dad." I know. When I first came to Uganda, I came out to serve these people. And these people didn't like my teaching because it was going against their traditions, and they kicked me out of their diocese. I know what it's like where you confront somebody with truth because they are in sin, and all of a sudden you're the bad guy. Guys, we know suffering. Because that is the cost of the mission. There's days you want to say, "Lord, what is this all about? What is this all about?" And let me tell you, often the Lord lets you see enough of your ministry to stay there, but doesn't let you see enough of the impact. It lets you see just a little of the impact, just enough to keep you humble and trusting. The mission field, listen, if you're going to be a missionary, remember these words. The mission field is the hardest thing you will ever do if you're serious. The hardest thing you will ever do. It is hard. Just even the living is hard. I like warm showers. I love toilets. I love American food. I love air conditioning. Oh, I'm like, let it blow on me. But it's just the day-to-day hardships of life. My wife, and she gives her testimony of the mission field, of being sent out to the mission field. She was bombarded with health and safety. If you're a good mom, you're going to have health and you're going to have safety. We go out to the field, the person who is in disease control, she's like, "Don't go." She like calls us on the phone like 3 times to say, "I just want to make sure you know with the conditions you're putting your children in." I'm like, "Lady, be quiet, you know." But you have to look at all these things in the face. Say, "I'm going to be faithful." If you look at him, you'll get overwhelmed. I'm going to be faithful today. I'm going to take you one last place. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 talks about all the people who've gone before us. All the people who've gone before us. My friends, if you are a missionary, you are just joining the rest of Christianity before you.
We have a line of missionaries. And we just get to line up at the end. And according to Hebrews 12:1, we have a cloud of witnesses around us. If you guys want to hear me preach on Hebrews 12:1 and 2, go to Eric's church. I just preached it last week. It'll encourage your heart, I think. And go the previous year, and I preached Hebrews 11 at his church. But here we see all those who have gone before us. In verse 4, you have Abel. In verse 5, you have Enoch. In verse 7, you have Noah. In verse 8, you have Abraham. And remember, Noah is told to build an ark in the middle of a dry desert. My friends, let me tell you, you know what that's called? Building an ark in the middle of a dry desert, you know what that's called? Stupid! Am I right? It's stupid. I mean, can you imagine? You know, there's Noah. We don't know where he got the wood. But most likely, he had to pay for it himself. He's building this big boat. You know, everybody's looking on saying, ah, look at Noah, the guy's mad. You think he suffered? He suffered. How about Abraham? Abraham's told, hey, go to this land. I don't know you, Lou, that I'm going to show you. Hey, honey, we're going to go spend his whole life as an alien and a sojourner on this world. Verse 9, he lived as an alien in the land of promise. Verse 10, he was looking to the city which foundations and architect and builder is God. Verse 13, all these people, Abraham being the primary one, without receiving the promise, having seen them from a distance, having welcomed them, and having confessed that they were what? Strangers and exiles on the earth. Life was not easy for Abraham. Verse 16, though they desired a better country, that is a what? Heavenly one. They lived for heaven. Moses chose, listen, look at verse 25. Moses chose what? Chose ill treatment. Chose what? Chose ill treatment. He chose to what? Suffer. He chose ill treatment with the people of God than the pleasures, or than the riches of Egypt. Than to enjoy the pleasures of sin. He choosing rather the reproach of Christ, riches than the treasures of Egypt. For he was what? Looking for his reward. You see, all of us, we choose to suffer as missionaries looking to our future reward. Look with me finally at verse 25. Look with me finally at verse 36. It says, and others, they experienced mockings, scourgings, yes, chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were tempted. They were put to death with a sword. They went about in sheepskins and in goatskins, being destitute and afflicted, wandering in deserts and in mountains and in caves and in holes in the ground. Friends, I'm talking real missions. Real missions comes at a cost. Real missions comes at a cost of you and me. And if you're going to be a missionary, before you ever launch off for foreign missions, make sure you've considered the cost. Last thing we need is for you to run away. My friends, My goal this week has been to make missionaries. Not just foreign ones, but local ones. I think I told you early on, we need less bad missionaries and more good ones. If you're going to be a good missionary, you must have this heart of loving people, planning, living under obligation, and not being ashamed. And you must choose to suffer. You must consider the cost, because it will cost you your life. Practically speaking, friends, this takes place when you go home. And you go to reach somebody, they will most likely disown you. They will most likely separate from you. Will you consider the cost? This is missions. I hope in some ways you guys say, what in the world did we sign up for? Because it's the reality. But may you go out and may you win your campuses for Christ. Let's pray. Father, we love you. We praise you. We exalt you. We thank you that you are called us just like you called your disciples to send us out to a world that is bound in their sin, to a world that is has sin controlling them and wants nothing to do with the truth, but doesn't want anything to do with you. And we have to go to these sin-controlled individuals and give them the gospel, of which will cost us something, will cost us ridicule, will cost us pain unto ourselves. God, help us hear your voice through your written word and be faithful to it. Proclaim it. Lord, I pray now that you would work in the spirit, in your spirit, in the hearts of these individuals, that from here you would rise up missionaries that will start here in Jerusalem, and that they will move even into the utter parts of the earth. We ask this for the praise, glory, and honor of your name, we pray. Amen. I have 7 minutes. Hold on. I want to use a couple minutes just to allow you to ask any practical question that you have. I'm going to put a couple practical things to you right off the bat. Number one, this. Many of you guys are high schoolers. You're all zealous and already, I want to go to the mission field tomorrow. I'm telling you this. Do me a favor. Do not go tomorrow to the foreign mission field. Do not go tomorrow to the foreign mission field. Go to college. Once you get in college, go even to boys' college. Go to a Christian school, get equipped. Then when you're done with college, go get a master's degree and get really equipped. Because you cannot take somebody beyond what you are. Go get fully equipped, then come out, and then make an impact. Are you with me? Good. Hope you'll come all the way. Okay? So go and get fully equipped for college. I'm going to say this too, ladies. Listen. When you dream of missions, and when you prepare yourself to be a missionary in a foreign field, think in terms of being a wife and a mother. Amy Carmichael's, God builds them. But you will one day be a wife. And as a wife, you have a responsibility to your husband. What is that responsibility? Huh? To submit, yes. And what is your main job description? Is to be a... is to be a helper, right? So sometimes what happens is this, and I see it all the time because, you know, I'm always doing counseling. What happens, you have the woman, she's like, we need to do missions. We need new missions. Come on, honey, let's go. You know, let's go do missions. You know, and it's like, the guy's like, I don't want to do missions. Come on, please. You know, I mean, and so with that, recognize that when you start dating someone, if you want to do missions, make sure that's his passion. Make sure that's his drive. Because what happens is that you are to help him in his calling. So even as you plan educationally, think in terms of how you can help even from them. Because when you start producing children out left and right, and you're like, all these kids are being coming out of you, you know, it's like all of a sudden, you know, the mission changes. And your primary mission at that time is where? In the home. You say, Shannon, you're so chauvinistic. You're so chauvinistic. I know I am, but it's okay. That's because what the Bible says that. And your greatest fulfillment will be in fulfilling your mission at home. And if you don't have your mission fulfilled at home, my friend, you have wasted your life. And so as you think, women, in terms of missions, think in terms of my home first. But with that, get a nursing degree. And that way you can always care for people in your home. They come in and you can help them. From an education standpoint, learn English as a second language. Anywhere in this world you could teach that. They can come right in your home. You know, think in these terms. Are you with me? Is that bad that I'm saying that? I'm just trying to be realistic. We read the Amy Carmichaels and we think, I'm going to go be Amy Carmichael. Amy Carmichael was single her whole life. Many of you, that's not your desires. I see it. You guys look at those guys as they walk by. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, so I'm just trying to help put some practical elements to missions in your world. Okay? And any questions you have quickly, and then we're going to take one picture, and we're going to get out of here. Yes, ma'am. Yep. That is a great question, and you know, and it's an important question. I don't know how to work this phone, so someone please silence that for me. Because, thank you very much. You know, this was just given to me right before I came, and I'm like, I have no idea. All these things are going on with it, and I don't know, but yeah, I'm like totally confused by this thing. You know, one problem with the missionaries, you live under a rock, you have no idea what in the world's going on, you know. Oh, Obama's president? Oh, really? You know.
Makes you feel any better, I live in the USA.
Okay, so don't embarrass yourself. what did I do? A couple of things that I did. One, we always were reaching out to our neighbors. And as a married couple, we'd always bring food, you know, on any holiday, any excuse we had to bring things to our neighbors, we did it. And what we would do is we'd always allow our home to be open to everyone. And even, you know, to people, you know, we've always had people living in our home. You know, in our home right now, literally during some parts of the year, we have 25 people living in our home. And it's by opening up your home that you open your hearts and that the community begins to know that they're loved. And what happens is just the people that you've ministered and discipled start discipling others. You know, and so one thing that we've always said is discipleship. Get one or two, three, four people, and you're meeting with them once a week and trying to invest in their life. With the neighbors, it's going out and you know, we'd always bring food for every holiday. And, you know, as soon as we moved in, we had a little open house for our neighbors just to equate to get involved within them, as well as getting involved in the community, just being a soccer coach. But then with that, you're inviting people into your home. And if I had the tool I had with the Quest for Truth, I would say, hey, after you build a relationship, can we go through and do Quest for Truth? Yeah, I always have it on my phone. I had my wife send it to me here. So that as I'm talking with people, I can just send it off. You know, if you guys want, download it and just send it to people. Hey, you talk to them, give them the gospel. You can't give them the full gospel on the plane trip, but you can at least get them saying, hey, you know about Christianity? You're a Christian? Oh, really? Tell me about it. You know, man, I had this really great Bible study, you know, and you just send it off. And that way, so other things that I did is, as a kid, I said, look, I want to try and share Christ with one person a day. You know, that's hard to attain. It's hard to fulfill. And but it's coming up with certain goals like that and just even walking down. But it's a lot of times it's being open, even thinking, if I were to do it again in light of where I've grown and see things now, I would in much greater way become more strategic in my community. Getting involved in things in my community, in my neighborhood where I'm helping people. I'm loving them. And as you love, they will know we are Christians by our. So as you love, the love is the gravity that pulls them in. And as you love them, then you impart your information. But always should be involved with at least two people, I would say, discipling them. And you guys can disciple. Let me tell you, you know who you can disciple? Your brothers and sisters. Some of you guys are older brothers. Look, we look up to our older brothers. If you guys are older siblings, maybe tell them about Jesus. As a kid, what I always did was I'd go and play. I'd come back from college. I'd go play with my brothers. You know? And so, I don't know. There's a couple ideas, and I wish I was better at it when I was here. But maybe God will call me back one day, and I'm just going to become a madman as to how I can reach my community. So, any other? Yes. Yeah, good question. You know, there's this idea of calling. Let me just do this. You know, take calling and let me open this window and then you guys just give it a big throw. Okay, ready? One, two, three. Calling. I don't look at it in those terms. I wouldn't say God didn't give me a voice in the ear. The issue is this. I have a calling to reach people. God opened up an opportunity for me where I can have a greater impact than I can here. And so for me, that was my calling. It was like, look, here's a bigger, the field is wide end of harvest. It was almost like, you know, if I don't go, like, you know, God's like kicking me in the backside. If I don't go, there's something wrong, you know. And so I would say that that's what it was. Don't get into subjective callings. Let me tell you, you go and subjectively, you know, God, you know, I was sitting over on a mission trip and all of a sudden this vision came over. All of a sudden I had this feeling. Like when you go to a mission, you're going to have all kinds of feelings. Some of them will be gastrational, but, you know, you're going to have all kinds of things. Don't go because of a feeling. Go because it's a field that needs help. Because, my friend, you'll get there on the field, and that feeling will go within the first 6 months. And you'll say, why am I here? And I would even tell you, if you're going to be a missionary, go and live with a missionary. Go live some time with a missionary. You know, some of you guys, if your churches are cool and your youth pastors are in agreement and your elders are behind you, you can come live with us for a few months. You know? We'll just, like, make you, like, cut the lawn with, like, I don't know. You know, but, you know, we'd be willing to open if you guys are really serious and radical. Look, man, come on in. Join 26, no problem. You add one more, you know. You know, we're open to that. But go and be part of a missionary. See what it's like. There's some day-to-day parts as well as some adventure parts. So, all right, I think I'm out of time. I wish I had all day with you. Everybody, you want to come up here really quickly? Let's take a picture.